This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by former NHL player Riley Cote. Riley is now the co-founder of Athletes for Care, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives of athletes through alternative medicine and better health care. Riley, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Riley. I mentioned, obviously, in the intro there that you're the co-founder of Athletes for Care. You know, it focuses a lot on the, correct me if I'm wrong, please. It focuses a lot on the use of cannabis and CBD as an alternative to opioids for players who are nursing injuries and for players who are trying to get back to health. Maybe in your own words, can you tell our audience what it is that your company does?
Yeah, absolutely. I realized this when I retired in 2010, that there was a lot of guys struggling when they retired, and, you know, they typically were handed, a pill full of, opioids and you know, painkillers of that nature. And I realized it ended up being a huge problem. So as I started speaking publicly about cannabis and, you know, how cannabis positively affected, my life, I realized there was other athletes in other sports that had similar stories, and we kind of came together as an organization to kind of create a platform for players to find an alternative to the traditional protocols of the medical establishment, which is, again, is a lot of pills. So cannabis winds up being an extremely healing plant with a lot of upside from just chronic pain to inflammation, anxiety to sleep. So we've learned that most people on the planet deal with these issues on a daily basis. So it's a sustainable tool. And, we're trying to destigmatize and normalize cannabinoids through sports. So there's a lot of arms with it, but education is the primary objective. And then, you know, getting into research initiatives to not only help the players, but the general public. Because, as we know, pain is pain, inflammation is inflammation, and anxiety is anxiety no matter who you are. So it's about the better good of public health.
You know, Riley, you just mentioned destigmatizing the use of cannabis, and you know, that leads really well into my next question, because you mentioned the education component, and just how far has it come when it comes to education and an awareness of the use of CBD, and cannabis? Because I've always been aware of the great use of cannabis for medicinal purposes. Obviously, when you're talking about, as you mentioned, if you have pain, anxiety, it's helped people that have a suppressed appetite. So just how far have we come from maybe 2010, prior to marijuana being legalized here in Canada and down south in certain states, but where do you think we're at right now in terms of it being more acceptable in the mainstream as far as being used for all of those things that you talked about?
Now, it's come a long, long way. And, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years since the 2014 Farm Bill, which opened up in the U.S. specifically, this gray area of these hemp-derived non-intoxicating cannabinoids like CBD. So now there's this whole other dimension to what cannabis really is. You know, if everyone looks at cannabis as just something that contains THC and gets you high, what you're kind of missing, you know, the grand scheme of what cannabis really is. And, you know, you look at this whole other sector of non-intoxicating cannabinoids like CBD, and there's 128 other ones that offer high anti-inflammatory properties and help with sleep and anxiety. So now there's this whole other world of people that are leaning on cannabis-based products. So it really, when I say destigmatizing, is this kind of like changing the appearance of what cannabis looks like when we say the word. You know, typically it's dark, it involves police and jail and, you know, all this darkness. Well, it only the laws created that darkness. And, you know, it's a healing plant that's been suppressed for so long, and now the cat's out of the bag. So now it's up for us to educate, get the word out there. But you've seen an absolute major transition in consciousness when it comes to what cannabis is, and, you know, you're seeing it going globally. I mean, with Canada being the number one country on the planet, going full legalization is a massive, massive thing for the shift of the way people view cannabis.
Riley, what's the how's this been embraced by your former, you know, former NHL players, like NHL alum like yourself? Have you spoken to a lot of guys, and what's their attitude towards this?
Yeah, it's been all positive, and I've spoken to a ton of guys, and they all know it internally. It's just kind of one of those things. A lot of guys know this information. They've either used cannabis, you know, a few times, and it made them feel good or better. And there's guys that use it all the time that, you know, aren't speaking publicly about it because, let's face it, it is still a bit taboo. And, you know, they don't want to sacrifice their contracts and their sponsorships and ruffle any feathers in the organization. So I get it. But there's so many guys that are already getting the benefits of this, and then there's so many guys that are not. And I've gotten in front of the original six alumni a few months back, and most of these guys never even heard of a cannabinoid, let alone use one. Besides back in the 70s, and, you know, when they're fever up at the beach, but like they don't understand. You know, they go from this very traditional model of, you know, a pill for every symptom. And then we'll wash it down with alcohol because that's okay because it's a legal substance. And then understand, then kind of wrapping their head around, oh, this plant that we've been told is bad our whole lives is actually a healing plant. And how do you educate someone that's philosophy is so opposite? And, you know, and that's the challenge because we trust so much in the establishment and they got a better, best interest in us. But, you know, it seems like it's not the case. So it's hard for people that have trusted the system for so long to all of a sudden switch their mindset on, okay, let's just transition from, you know, this pill-based model to this plant-based model. It's hard for people to wrap their head around, and, you know, that's why you just keep planting seeds in consciousness. Eventually people will at least try it, give it a shot, and once they do, they never go back. It's an amazing thing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Riley Cote, a former NHL player and co-founder of Athletes for Care, which is dedicated to improving the lives of athletes through alternative medicine and better health care. And Riley, under the category of fortuitous timing, it was announced late yesterday that the NHL Alumni Association has partnered with Canopy Growth, which is a cannabis company, to conduct some tests on NHL alumni players to sort of study their healthcare and study their post-career lives. You know, what are your thoughts on this announcement by the NHL Alumni Association and the fact that they're partnering with a cannabis company?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing news, and it's been a long time coming. I've been speaking with Glenn Healy about this this type of thing for over 2 years, and I know he was in an interesting position with it all because it is, you know, somewhat politically driven, but you know, this announcement is opens up so much opportunity to help players, and exactly what we're trying to do with Athletes for Care is at least give these guys the option. We don't have to force it down their throats, but at least give them, you know, the option for this to be a treatment. And this specifically is really about brain health, I believe, and, you know, and the concussion issue. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the U.S. patent on cannabinoids was issued in 2003 on, you know, cannabinoids as neuroprotectants and antioxidants. So there's a lot of research coming out of Israel as far as using these cannabinoids to manage and treat TBI, concussion, and eventually CTE issues if it gets that far. But very promising stuff. And that's the stuff that we need to, you know, we really need to study to make it, you know, tangible, not just for athletes, for the rest of the world, because this is very real. You're talking about, you know, we talk about an opioid crisis we have in our hands, and you talk about a mental health crisis we have in our hands. Like, there's a lot of anxiety and depression, and there's a lot of SSRIs that are, you know, all the stuff that's prescribed equally as bad as the opioids. So, you know, we need to get our mental health back or our health back in general. I think cannabis is a gateway to wellness, you know, the philosophy of cannabis being, you know, a gateway drug. You know, the only thing I've seen cannabis do is as far as that goes, is actually getting people off prescription drugs or managing their alcoholism. I know many guys that have used cannabis for that specific reason. So, you know, it's a great beginning, and there's so much more to come. You know, I think once they open up that can of worms, they're going to see, well, wow, these guys are really healing. These guys are really getting their mental health back. And it's just gonna open up so much more opportunity for these guys to talk and speak the truth.
Yeah, Riley, you had a long NHL career and in the American Hockey League as well. And up until a couple of years ago, you were coaching in the American Hockey League with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. And before that, the Adirondack Phantoms, pardon me. But now that you've transitioned full-time to this, I wanted to ask you why you decided to make this your full-time career, because obviously you're very passionate about this. Was it just because you were so involved with Athletes for Care and Hemp Heals that you decided this was your cause and this is what you wanted to do full-time?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things, and hockey's been obviously a huge part of my life since I was 4 years old, and it's still ingrained in my DNA, but I realized I could help so many more people outside of a 23-man locker room, and this was my cause. I've done so much in different charities and spent so much time, and resources for different charities that I realized that this was it. Like, this can help so many different people in all walks of life. And then I get, I can go on for days on this stuff, but, getting into the environmental thing and component with hemp and, just local economics and how hemp and cannabis are such healers that it was easy for me almost to follow my other passion. You know what I mean? We all got other passions and skills and stuff. And it was such a raw industry and there was really no one doing it. I was, and speaking of it. And I was kind of one of the first guys at least in the hockey sector, to really speak publicly about this. So it was just kind of finding my niche again. I mean, I took on the role of the enforcer when I was 20 years old. I had to find an identity. It's kind of like, what we try to teach with Athletes for Care is just kind of introducing new opportunity, new purpose, and helping people find our identity. And I guess I found it with cannabis and hemp.
You know, Riley, oftentimes, especially when you're passionate about something, you want change to happen quickly. But with the NHL, especially, they're a league that can be a little bit set in their ways. Is this something that you could see them embracing soon, or is this something that's going to take a few more years before the NHL is ready to embrace this full on?
Well, I think it's going to be a couple more years until they publicly really change their stance on it. I know that some of these major cannabis companies, probably Canopy is one of them, that have been knocking on NHL teams' doors, as title sponsors. It's going to happen. Money talks, and you're going to see cannabis commercials in sports, in hockey, probably one of the first ones. I would like to think, within the year, maybe even going into next season, you might start seeing them. This one's going to open up a can of worms. Now they're officially publicly saying that they're in partnership with a cannabis company. So not too far behind. There is still some political issues, or if you want to call it that, the U.S. border is still federally legal in the U.S. So for the NHL to just change their policy for the players overnight because it's legal in Canada, I just don't see that happen until at least the federal government in the U.S. changes their stance. But it's progress. It's changing. I mean, the U.S. has to make a move. They legalized hemp just right before Christmas. So everything is changing. It is slow. I mean, you're talking about government. You're talking about institutes of higher learning. Everything is slow, and it's really tested my patience, but it's just the way it is. If you want to do it right, you have to work with them, not against them, and it's nice to see the change.
Last question for you, Riley. Most people think of cannabis and cannabis ingestion as, smoking a joint or using a pipe or something like that. What is the biggest misconception regarding ingesting of CBD or ingesting of cannabinoids?
Well, I think the biggest misconception is that all cannabinoids get you high. I mean, the THC molecule is the only one, and that's, really anything grown above 0.3% THC, which will get you high and deemed by the government as quote-unquote marijuana. There's this whole other world of non-psychoactive or non-intoxicating cannabinoids. Again, CBD is the most prevalent one, but there's all these other minor ones, up to 130 different ones. That don't get you high. So there's this whole world of healing and anti-inflammatory properties and anti-anxiety and helping with sleep, protect the brain, all this great stuff. And then you get into the disease state stuff that it's helping with. It's this whole world that we're not really talking about. Everyone kind of just resorts or compares just the word cannabis to, Cheech and Chong, and that's fine. And people smoke cannabis because it's the quickest delivery system for cannabis and the oldest and the most primal. But there's this whole other world outside of that. You can process cannabis into any sort of delivery method and delivery system that, from drink to food to transdermal patch, cream, you name it. So I think that's the biggest misconception. If you just remove the THC out of your mind, you can see this whole world of healing. And then, you know, then you can understand that THC is actually a healing property as well.
Riley, just one more question for you, and it's not cannabis related. Our last guest was Jody Shelley, and I know that you guys had a few scraps back in the day when you were playing in the NHL. So we just want to let you set the record straight here. Who was the tougher fighter? Was it you or Jody?
I had two good fights with Jody. The first one, I definitely have to say I won it. And the second one is probably a draw. But you know what? I mean, Shelley's played way more than I did, fought way more than I did in the NHL. He's an absolute warrior. I mean, I got to give the overall win to him because he's a beauty. I know him personally off the ice too, so nothing but good things to say about
him. You won the battles. You may have won the war. That's a very good political answer. Riley Cote played in the NHL, and he's the co-founder of Athletes for Care, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives of athletes through alternative medicine and better health care. Riley, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we look at the Central Division playoff race. The St. Louis Blues have a very soft schedule ahead. Could they potentially move into one of the top two spots in the Central Division? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Only three goaltenders have ever won their first seven games on home ice. Jordan Binnington will be the fourth, and he will go to 7-0-0 on home ice for the St. Louis Blues since being recalled from the American Hockey League.
Been nasty.
Yes. He wasn't so nasty last night, though, as the Hurricanes lost to, the St. Louis Blues lost to the Carolina Hurricanes.
Bunch of jerks.
Yeah, the bunch of jerks continue on.
You don't mess with the real deal.
Evander Holyfield.
When the real deal is in the building.
Well, the real deal might be the St. Louis Blues. I mean, it's a fascinating race right now in the Central Division. The Blues, who have three games in hand on the Nashville Predators, sit 5 points behind the Predators. And you think, okay, well, 5 points is a pretty good margin, but again, the three game in hand is a big deal as well. You look at the Blues' schedule. It's unbelievably easy. After tonight, so they have not 18 games left in the regular season, same as the Jets. The Predators have 15 games. The St. Louis Blues, including tonight's contest in Dallas, play four playoff teams in total. I mean, their schedule is loaded with the bottom of the NHL, the Anaheims, the Kings. They got Arizona. They have Ottawa. They have Edmonton. They have Detroit. They have a lot of really bad teams.
Ottawa. You actually mean the Belleville Senators.
Pardon me, the Belleville Senators. I'm not even sure who their ECHL affiliate is.
I'm pretty sure the Belleville Senators could beat the Ottawa Senators for the record.
Well, I mean, the St. Louis Blues schedule is so soft from here to the end of the regular season. Do you think that they, given their three games in hand, can overtake the Nashville Predators and or the Winnipeg Jets atop the Central Division?
So instead of the Nashville-Winnipeg series being the second-round series, it would be the first-round series? Is that what you're suggesting, possibly?
Well, I'm still going to suggest the Jets win the Central Division.
Well, so you did say they could.
They could, theoretically. I mean, if the Jets continue to struggle.
6 points is a lot, but still.
But the Jets, I mean, and the Jets and the Blues have the same number of games remaining.
Right. By the way, Drew, the Brampton Beast are the Ottawa Senators' ECHL affiliate.
Thank you.
So, come on.
Good job there, Ezzy. Thank you for that research. But can the Blues, with their three games in hand on the Predators, overtake the Preds given the remaining schedules that each have? And maybe can the Blues and all of a sudden get home ice advantage against the Predators in a first round matchup in theory?
Well, obviously they can. I mean, they've been on such a run that it's unbelievable. And then St. Louis has been that team that, you know, nobody really wants to play right now, obviously, because they've just been demolishing everyone, obviously, aside from who we just saw them play, Carolina. But you're right, Drew. I mean, I'm looking at the Predators schedule. The Predators schedule isn't exactly difficult. They've got, you know, Minnesota a couple of times. They've got Anaheim. They've got the Kings. They've got Minnesota three games in the next month for Nashville. So, I mean, they got Pittsburgh twice. They've got Columbus. They've got the Leafs. They've got the Jets again.
A little rematch of the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got, you know, in Nashville's favor, they've got a couple of games against some teams that they should. They've got at least five games where they could pick up points fairly easily. So I still think that needs to be taken into account when you're thinking about what St. Louis is going to do. But, yeah, no, I mean, obviously, we talked about it with the Jets. The strength of schedule is an important factor. And, you know, with Winnipeg, it's played against them. Obviously, they haven't played well against the lesser opponents. Maybe they'll change that, going forward. But, of course, they're not going to have that opportunity because they're going to be playing stronger opponents. We don't know what's going to happen with St. Louis. Maybe they'll come back down to earth. But right now, and we talked about it with Sean Tierney about what St. Louis has been, well, we were talking about the Jets specifically, but if you look at it, some of his charts, St. Louis has done such a good job of protecting the net and being such a good, responsible team that it's allowed Binnington to kind of come in there and be solid as a guy who's kind of, you know, in his infancy in the NHL, really. So, you know, St. Louis has been real. I mean, this is not a mirage. This is not like something that they've done, and it's just by luck. I mean, when you sustain a run that they've sustained, and of course we've seen this with the Flyers where they went on that 10-game run last year, still missed the playoffs. I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen with St. Louis this year, but I'm just saying that obviously sometimes teams can get hot and it dissipates. I would suspect, though, that with St. Louis, what you're seeing is real.
Yeah, and you know what's the most amazing thing is that right now Braden Schenn is out of the lineup. He's going to be back in the lineup soon. David Perron is out of the lineup. He was on a 13-game point streak before he went out of the lineup. That was back in mid-January. So the Blues are going to get some more bodies. Tyler Bozak has been filling in on that second line for the Blues. But you're right, Dave. I mean, this is a very good defensive team. And if you look at the Blues in the first half versus where they are now, the goaltending is the big improvement, right? Jake Allen was struggling. Jordan Binnington has been unbelievable the last couple of months, arguably a Calder Trophy finalist right now, even though he played the majority of the season in the American Hockey League. But the goaltending has been fantastic, but more so the defensive coverage, as you talked about, has been better. And now Vladimir Tarasenko is starting to look like the old Vladimir Tarasenko, because Ryan O'Reilly, I've talked about many times this year, he's having one of the most underrated seasons. As far as I'm concerned, you could put him as a Hart Trophy finalist right now. And I'm not joking. I mean, he's not up there with Nikita Kucherov and Connor McDavid and Johnny Gaudreau up there in the elite scoring. Like, I think he's around 60 to 65 points right now. I haven't checked as of late, but he's at a point per game pace or over a point per game pace, right? So Ryan O'Reilly
has 63 points in 64 games played.
That was close.
Yeah, you were pretty good. So can't call you a liar for that one.
Right. He's an excellent two-way center. We know that. He was really good with Buffalo prior to that. So he's been a great story, and as I mentioned, they're starting to get healthier, and as opposed to being a seller at the trade deadline, which it looked like they might be a couple of months ago, they didn't really do much at the trade deadline. You know, they made the one move, which was, what was it, Oscar Fantenberg?
Oscar Fantenberg went to Calgary. Yeah. Michael Delzato went from Anaheim to St. Louis.
Michael Delzato, depth defenseman, right?
Yeah.
And I like that move. You know, just a guy that you can pluck into the lineup. He's not going to be a top pairing guy for you, but if you have an injury, you know, he can play on the third pair.
He's an NHL defenseman.
He's
got his warts, but he's an NHL defenseman.
Right. I mean, so they didn't need to make many moves. And back to your original question. Yeah. They're 5 points behind the Preds, 6 points behind the Jets, and they have the games in hand like the Jets do. So there's always a possibility. I still think it's going to be the Jets that win the division, and I think Nashville is going to finish second. But the point is, the Blues now have an opportunity. They've given themselves an opportunity to win the division, where it looked like back in December, they were out of it.
Certainly. Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, further to Ezzie's point, if this doesn't give you, as the Winnipeg Jets, impetus to be that first place team, because you do not want to finish second or third and have to play Nashville or St. Louis. You want these two teams to kick the crap out of each other in the first round.
Good
job keeping a PG there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was the only way I was keeping it. But the fact is that if you're the Jets, I mean, think about it. You have Dallas or Minnesota.
Or Colorado.
Or Colorado, whatever. Yeah. Although Colorado might give them a little bit of trouble. But you've got, I don't think over seven games they would. But you've got those options versus St. Louis or Nashville. If that doesn't give you the desire to finish first place, I don't know what would.
Dave, if you're the Jets, you want the first round to be like
last year,
Mike Tyson versus Peter McNeely, and you want the Predators and the Blues to be Mike Tyson versus Evander Holyfield.
Right.
Obviously, minus the ear eating.
Well, the ear eating could be entertaining anyways.
It was biting, for the record.
Well, he definitely
spit it.
Yeah,
I think he was eating.
He took off a piece of the guy's ear.
I don't think
he didn't swallow it.
There was no mastication.
Well, but I mean, let's be honest. If you bite a guy's ear enough to rip it off his skin, you're probably swallowing something there.
Okay.
Some tendon or
a little bit of cannibalism, just
right,
a little bit.
Back to hockey.
But the Blues, since January 1st, the best team in the entire NHL.
Yep.
I mean, so to your point about just minor tweaks at the deadline, because why go nuts when you've been, since January 1st, 19-6-2, the St. Louis Blues are 40 points. The Predators, over the same number of games, 27 games, only 31 points. The Jets even less, 28 points. I mean, you know, you're absolutely right, Dave. The Jets have to have a much harder schedule, but they have to know that the St. Louis Blues have the same you know, with the same number of games remaining, have a much easier schedule, and that doesn't allow for any more slippage. The Jets have had their lull. You can't have another lull, or you're going to end up second or third in the division and play a much harder opponent in the first round when you thought for the majority of the year you've been in the driver's seat in the Central Division.
Yeah, and I think the St. Louis Blues, you know, they don't have the same level of scoring that you have from Winnipeg or even Nashville right now. I think they're third in that ranking. But again, a very dangerous team, a very solid defensive team. They've allowed 14 less goals than the Jets in the same amount of games. I mean, so that's one thing you got to. We were talking about the concerns that they had with Jake Allen and Nett. You know, this is a team that now defensively seems to get it. And what do we always look at? Defense wins championships. Offense is flashy, but really at the end of the day, you want defensively responsible hockey being played by your squad. So I think that's important for the Jets to start embracing a little bit more because St. Louis seems to be doing it. And look what kind of run they've been on.
The Blues will be in action tonight back at home, second half of back-to-back against the Dallas Stars. They look to get back on their winning ways and move within 3 points of the Predators and 4 points of the Jets. When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us to talk about the aftermath of the NHL trade deadline and, of course, give us an update on his dog, Shadow. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website that has the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Associated Press, he's a good friend of ours, Stephen Wino joins the program. Stephen, as we do each and every time you're on the program, we have to start with the pressing issue of the day. How's Shadow?
Shadow's tired. We did a 4-mile walk this morning, so a little bit of rain last night. He didn't love that, but got a good walk in this morning and is doing well.
That's good. I always wanted to get our Shadow update. Stephen, obviously bring you on to talk about the NHL and the post-trade deadline aftermath. It was an exciting and a busy Monday, throughout the NHL. From your perspective, was there one team in particular that you thought were the big winners? I mean, people say the Columbus Blue Jackets just by virtue of the significant acquisitions they made, maybe the Vegas Golden Knights and getting Mark Stone, maybe the Jets and getting Kevin Hayes. Who, from your perspective, was the big winner after the NHL trade deadline?
I think it's Vegas. The Golden Knights, for a lot of reasons, but the fact that George McPhee essentially took everything he got from the expansion draft and was able to not give up a whole lot other than the pick he got from the New York Islanders, who turned into Eric Brandstrom, the Oscar Lindbergh, who he took from the Rangers, and another pick he got for drafting Mark Messier, and turning it into Mark Stone, who he now has signed for the next 8 years beyond this. That's what the Golden Knights, I think, are the biggest winner in this. And knowing that George McPhee wasn't afraid to swing for the fences again at the deadline, and having the kind of future assets to get a player like Mark Stone, who is a great all-around winger, that is the depth that you might need to be able to get out of a brutal Pacific Division and a brutal Western Conference. And it's not going to be an easy path for anyone. The Jets having to go through the Predators and vice versa, the Sharks, the Flames, and the Golden Knights having to go through each other, even just to get to a Western Conference final. But Vegas now looks like, to me, the front runner to come out of the West. And I know they've struggled through a lot of the stretch. The Jets have struggled at times, so have the Predators. You look at the goaltending being shored up. You look at the kind of depth they have at forward. And the Golden Knights are just as good a team, if not better, than they were last year.
Stephen, in your opinion, in the Eastern Conference, who's been a bigger surprise, the New York Islanders or the Montreal Canadiens? And which team do you think has a better chance of going far in the playoffs?
It's the New York Islanders, to me. And they're just surprising because these are the same goalies that struggled last year in Buffalo with Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss in New York before. And Barry Trotz is far and away the Jack Adams Award winner. The Islanders have the kind of structure in their game that they were lacking under Doug Wade. And certainly when you think a guy like John Tavares leaves and they get better, it's amazing. Like the fact that the Islanders are a playoff team is already a surprise. The fact that they're leading the Metropolitan Division and have been this good for this long is a shocker. And Montreal, you can say this is Carey Price's team. And as long as Carey Price is healthy and kind of getting basically on top of his game, the Canadiens are a threat. They can go far. And we're looking potentially now at that being a first-round series. That you could see Montreal and the Islanders meeting in the first round. I think the Islanders are a team that you could see the magic wear off at some point in the playoffs. But I'm going to take Barry Trotz. I would take the Islanders to go further than the Canadiens and maybe a few other teams in the Eastern Conference.
And, Steven, just by making the playoffs, it's a win for the Islanders, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the fact that this is a team that got Matt Martin and Leo Komarov and said goodbye to John Tavares, it just shows what Barry Trotz can do as a coach. And Anders Lee is having a career year. Josh Bailey, he is getting more out of that team than we've seen any coach. And that's nothing against Doug Wade or Jack Capuano in recent years. But to have less talent than the Islanders have before and be able to get to the playoffs and potentially have home ice in the playoffs at what it would be a terrifying atmosphere at the Coliseum will be a fun little run in April for those guys.
You know, Steven, I don't like to pile on teams, but I don't know that we've seen a bigger dumpster fire than we have with the Ottawa Senators. You know, they are obviously looking for a new head coach after relieving Guy Boucher of his duties. This is a team that has, or an organization that has a ton of prospects in the system. But if you're a coach going into that situation, are you really excited considering how things have gone this year?
No, and I do like piling on teams, so I appreciate it. I think the guys, the kind of coaches who'd want that job are someone who wants their first chance at being an NHL head coach. And you have to go into it with eyes wide open. And I'm looking at someone like Troy Mann, who was their coach in Belleville, who was the coach of the Hershey Bears, who helped get a lot of the Capitals players ready for a Stanley Cup run last year. And maybe a Sheldon Keith, who coaches the Toronto Marlies in the AHL, of guys who kind of want that first crack at being a head coach and are willing to put up with everything that's going on there. And this is, I don't have a problem with Pierre Dorion in terms of a coach working for him, but Eugene Melnyk is probably the worst owner in pro sports, and there's a lot wrong there. They don't have their first-round pick this year. They have Columbus's first-round pick, and even if the Blue Jackets miss the playoffs and win the lottery, that's top three protected. There's not a whole lot of future there. It's going to take 2, 3, 4 years for the team to even be competitive again. But Eugene Melnyk is the problem. Eugene Melnyk is the reason why coaches wouldn't want to go there. You do have young talent, and maybe the only saving grace there is there's really low expectations. You're not expected to be good. You're not even expected to be competitive anytime soon.
Couldn't you make the argument, Steven, that it's the best job in hockey and that there's no expectations whatsoever, so if you fail miserably, well, you're supposed to, given their roster, and there's only upside there?
No, Eugene Melnyk, it cannot be the best job in hockey. It can't. not with that ownership, not with an arena in Canada. It just doesn't work. Even with the lowest expectations in the world, every coach goes into a job thinking you can win there. And Eugene Melnyk, literally, Pierre Dorion 5 days ago said, Guy Boucher is our coach, we're going to support him, and then fired him 4 days after and threw Mark Crawford in there. You don't know what's going to happen. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing in Ottawa, and that makes it a tough place to work.
Absolutely. My comment was a little tongue-in-cheek. Steven Wino of the Associated Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Steven, you know, earlier this week, the Bruins and the Lightning met, and it was the first time, I think, in NHL history that two teams with 14-game point streaks would meet in the same contest. And the Bruins won. They're now 11-0-4 in their last 15 games. Why isn't anyone talking about them?
It's baffling to me. I've loved the Bruins since really last year's playoffs, and it just never seemed to be healthy at the right time. And even this is happening without David Pastrnak. Like you consider that he had the freak accident where he broke his thumb, and that he's going to come back and be a little refreshed as long as he's back to 100%. This is a nasty team. They're big. They're skilled. You add a guy like Marcus Johansson at the deadline. This is a deep blue line. Bruce Cassidy is a far better coach than he was in his first NHL game with Washington, which is, I guess, 15 years ago at this point. And as long as Tuukka Rask is on top of his game there, this is a Bruins team that could upset the Lightning, that could go to a Stanley Cup final. And if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, I am terrified of another first-round series against the Boston Bruins.
Now, Steven, I got to stick with the theme of why isn't anybody talking about this, or why aren't enough people talking about this, but Leon Draisaitl with the Edmonton Oilers, 39 goals, 78 points. He's already set career highs. We know the Oilers are not going to be a playoff team this year, and people have been focusing on the Oilers for obviously other reasons, but why aren't more people talking about Leon Draisaitl's year? Because you could argue that he's having one of the best years of any player in the NHL this year.
He is, and I think there are two factors in play here on Leon Draisaitl. One is the McDavid effect, and kind of Connor McDavid is the star there. And you can say that whether someone's playing with Connor McDavid or they're playing on another line on a team with Connor McDavid, it certainly helps that they're not getting the top defensive pair. They're not getting the top kind of defensive shutdown line and top players to play against, and that helps. And I also, it doesn't help to be in Edmonton, to have kind of those 9, 10 o'clock Eastern starts. It's one of the reasons why Connor McDavid is not as household a name in the United States on the East Coast as he should be to casual fans who are not big-time hockey fans. Is the same problem with Leon Draisaitl right now. And he is a guy who, Peter Shirelli's done a lot of things wrong there, but in Edmonton before he got fired. But just extending Connor McDavid, extending Leon Draisaitl, and giving those two building blocks to kind of to build around, whether it's Keith Gretzky or whoever gets that job next. Draisaitl is a franchise player, whether he's playing on a line, on a wing with McDavid, or playing as a number two center.
You know, Stephen, count me as someone who loves those bunch of jerks in Carolina. I like the post-game celebrations that they're doing. Yesterday, we saw, of course, Evander Holyfield, the real deal, doing the old knockout punch. So they're having a lot of fun with it. Do you see, I mean, this is a team now that's third in the Metropolitan. Is this something, do you think, that we would see continue into the playoffs?
I guess. Everything but the Hurricanes has amazed me this season. I didn't think they were any good. I didn't think they were a playoff contender. I didn't think Rod Brind'Amour was going to be as good a coach. I wasn't. And the fact that this team is doing it with Peter Mrazek and Curtis McIlhenny, with little bits of Scott Darling kind of mixed in there, it's incredible to me. Sebastian Aho, he's not going to beat Nikita Kucherov for MVP, but he deserves some love there. He probably should be on the Hart ballot if the Hurricanes make the playoffs. But why wouldn't they continue this? Why wouldn't they at least continue having fun and doing this? Same thing like with the Islanders. I don't know when the magic's going to wear off in Carolina, and it's going to be a tough battle trying to keep the Blue Jackets and the Penguins out of the playoffs. I mean, of those three teams, one of them's going to miss, and it's hard to see the Penguins missing. It's hard to see the Blue Jackets after all those additions missing, but Carolina's doing a lot of things right now.
Stephen Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, we were talking about the St. Louis Blues previous segment. The Blues have 3 games in hand on the Nashville Predators. There's 5 points behind the Predators, and they only play 4 playoff teams, or these 4 teams that are currently in a playoff spot from now until the end of the regular season. Can the Blues overtake the Predators and maybe finish either second or atop the Central Division if they overtake the Jets as well?
Oh, yeah, that they absolutely can. And this was my hot take in talking to some media colleagues in Washington earlier this week. I think the Blues beat the Predators in the first round of the playoffs. And there's two things here. One is the Predators aren't playing very well right now. And we'll see if Mikael Granlund and Wayne Simmonds kind of change the mix up a little bit to where Pierre Laviolette can get that team back on track. But things have not been going well in Nashville. I actually expected a little bit more of a shakeup, I guess, at the deadline from David Poile, looking at that division and looking at kind of getting through Winnipeg and getting through the Central. But the Blues have also come on, and Jordan Binnington has been a revelation in goal there. They had a tough schedule at the start of the year. It didn't work out with Mike Yeo, but everything has seemed to click. And we saw already at the start of the year, the team looked like it had too much talent to be at the bottom of the Western Conference, and been proven to be right. I mean, you go look at Parayko and Pietrangelo, Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, again, could be a selkie, late being sort of candidate again this year. This is a really good team, and if I'm the Jets and Predators, like, you don't want to have to face that team in the first round if you can help it.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. He's a good friend of ours. Stephen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Stephen. When we come back, we discuss the Ottawa Senators, their decision to dismiss Guy Boucher as head coach, and their status as the number one tire fire and dumpster fire in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
And when Guy came in, I let him know that he was not going to be our coach anymore. After that, met with the players before practice. I told them that our play recently wasn't acceptable and that moving forward that didn't want any more excuses.
That's my favorite part of the clip. That's Senators General Manager Pierre Dorion telling his players, who basically make up a AHL roster, that their performance isn't good enough and no more excuses. Can you imagine having the chutzpah to go into the dressing room after you've traded away your entire team and to tell these players that? My God, it's an entertaining disaster in Ottawa.
I told Guy that after I traded away all of our best players, it was unacceptable that we were losing.
It's like, what? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Our good buddy Mauro is predicting an Edmonton Oilers victory this afternoon in Columbus. So if you want some easy money, contact Mauro Zappia and lay a wager with him on this afternoon's contest between the Blue Jackets and the Oilers.
You know what? I like that prediction, though, because we know how desperate teams can play, right? We thought that the Jets were just going to roll over the Ottawa Senators. The Sens beat the Jets twice, so I like that prediction from Mauro. It could happen.
Yeah, it could happen.
I'm going to join him. Okay. I think the Oilers do beat the Blue Jackets.
Already.
So now that I've joined him, that means there's no chance the Oilers win.
No chance. Yeah. We'll lay the bet off air in a little while. Anyways, welcome back. The Ottawa Senators, they dismissed Guy Boucher, and the players certainly weren't upset at the dismissal of Guy Boucher.
Why not just wait till the end of the year? That's my whole point.
You know,
Mark Crawford's not going to be the head coach next year.
Not a chance. I mean, you heard...
What a joke.
You heard Craig Anderson and you heard Mark Borowiecki, whose name I can never pronounce, you know, say that they were pretty much sick of Guy Boucher and that the guy, you know, installs a system and then never makes any changes to it. So they weren't upset that he got fired and they didn't like him as a head coach. That was clear by their very blunt comments. But they obviously didn't like him as a head coach and his efforts had failed earlier in the season. So doing it now is just bizarre. It just, you know, adds to the confusion. And if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, there's no reason to have any hope that the people that are steering the ship in Ottawa have anything but, you know, just icebergs ahead of them. Just another bullet in what has been a terrible stretch for the Ottawa Senators.
Have you guys looked at the Ottawa Senators roster recently?
I mean, I assume it's a bunch of crying emojis. That's who they put out on the ice.
No, but like, you've taken Mark Stone, Matt Duchene, and Ryan Dzingel off of that roster, and you've got two rookies on your top line. Brady Tkachuk and Colin White are actually having nice seasons for the Senators. Tkachuk's having a great season for an 18-year-old, and Colin White is also a top prospect, and he's having a nice year for the Senators. But when you look up and down the roster, how do you expect this team to beat any other team in the NHL when you take away all of those good players? I mean, it's just unrealistic for Pierre Dorion to think that Guy Boucher was going to produce wins. I mean, they're lucky if they're in games right now.
The fact he walked into the dressing room, and if he said verbatim what he said, or more or less verbatim what he said in that clip, to me, it is just unbelievable. How can any player that's on that Senators roster, we know that they don't have any faith in ownership. How do you have any faith in the general manager after he comes in and gives that kind of absurd speech? How do you not dismiss Dorion at season's end as well, aside the fact they probably has some term on his contract and, and it would cost Melnick too much money? You know, how do you have any confidence at all? I know you're going through the rebuild, and they start every press release by referring to the fact they're going through a rebuild.
And the Ottawa Flats thing just happened again, right?
LeBreton Flats. Yeah. Their arena deal fell
apart. Was it LeBreton or LeBreton?
LeBreton. It's not Neil Broughton. It's Neil LeBreton.
Great American hockey player.
Exactly. And his brother, Aaron Broughton.
Yep.
Yeah.
Didn't one of them play for the Jets?
I think they played for the North Stars. I think maybe Aaron had a cup of coffee with the Jets as well. I'd have to look back. HockeyDB, coming up right now. But, I mean, how do you have any faith in Dorion being the general manager after he makes those absurd comments? It's just a disaster in Ottawa. And, you know, what about the new head coach? You know, we just asked Stephen Wino about that. Is anybody going to want that job?
I think there are going to be some coaches that want the job. I want to get Dave in here for a second, but I think there are going to be people interested in that job, but you know that the team's not going to be very good for at least the next 2 years, maybe 3 years. I mean, they don't have a high number one pick coming, first round pick, right? We know that because they traded it away in the Matt Duchene trade. They got a late first round pick back from Columbus by trading Duchene to them.
Wherever it is.
But it's not like, you know, you have a Jack Hughes or a Capo Caco or a top prospect coming back into the lineup next year. So they're not going to be good next year. I mean, at best, you improve on this year. Maybe you compete for a wild card spot next year. But based on the way this roster is constructed, I don't see the Senators being big players in the free agency market.
Just a quick aside, Aaron Broughton was the one who played for the Jets.
Thank you. Got that one right.
Not Neil.
That's what I said.
Oh, did you?
That's what I said.
And no, you said Neil Broughton and his brother Aaron, and I said didn't
one of them play for the Jets, and I said Aaron Broughton played for the Jets.
I was the one that brought it up.
You forgot about Paul Broughton, the other brother who played. I knew there were three brothers.
Well, I'm glad we brought it up.
And he played for the Rangers, the Stars, and the Blues.
It took Sean a second there. Producer Sean Assor, it took him a second to get that joke, I think.
The Broughton Bros.
So now that our hockey trivia is done, the one thing that I will say, and Stephen touched on it in our question, my question to him, no big deal. But the fact of the matter is that this is a team that has a lot of young prospects, and that's one thing that they got. And Eric Brännström is really good. I mean, this kid is very dynamic.
You watched him with the Chicago Wolves probably more than anyone here in Winnipeg.
I've seen the Wolves.
The Wolves are here in Winnipeg. They're a regular opponent of the Moose.
Yeah, and he's a very good young player. So I mean, and he's a defenseman. So you know he's a guy that you're going to have in your lineup. So there's assets there. There's definitely young players that, you know, and he's, you know, people were looking at that trade when they made it with Vegas and they thought, is that all you're getting? But that's a defenseman who could be in your organization for 10 years. That's a Josh Morrissey type of defenseman.
When's his contract up? That's when he's out of the organization.
Yeah, I know. That's what everybody says. But the fact of the matter is that he is a very talented left shooting defenseman. So, I mean, he's a player. Sometimes we look at these deals and we think to ourselves, well, they only got one player. But when you get a player of that high a quality, you know, that's an A-plus prospect. You don't need an A, you know, a couple of A's or a three B's and stuff like that, sure, that you're going to hope one of them is going to pan out. This kid is going to pan out. He's going to be a very good hockey player for the Senators potentially for years to come. So there are pieces that are within this organization. Belleville is a team, and we talked about it because the Moose are playing them right now, played them last night, beat them in overtime, played them again today to finish up a six-game road trip. Belleville's been very good. So they've got a lot of really good young players on this team. Like I said, they're undefeated in 16 straight games. So this is a team that, you know, there are the pieces. But organizationally, how do you do this? How do you go in? And I think Steven's right. I think it has to be a young guy who wants to make his mark in the NHL, possibly even, you know, a man as the head coach in the AHL and then potentially a head coach in the NHL. An opportunity to grow these young players without that threat of expectation. But again, it's hard to keep your NHL veterans happy unless you're overpaying them, which we talked about last week.
Right, to Dave, and just quickly further to your point here, when you're talking about, you know, the young prospects in the system, Eric Brännström obviously coming back in the Stone trade, if your defense going forward is going to be built around Thomas Chabot and Eric Brännström, and then you've got Brady Tkachuk and Colin White, you've got Logan Brown, you've got Drake Batherson, you've got Christian Willanen, former UND product, Jacob Bernard Docker, who's playing for the UND Fighting Hawks right now. So you've got a good young system coming up, and you're obviously going to get your first round pick here, and hopefully you make the best out of it, even though it's a late one. You know, a couple of years from now, they're going to be a team to watch, but they're just not going to be good, I think, for at least the next couple of years.
Bob McKenzie, TSN, obviously we know who Bob McKenzie is, TSN hockey insider, spoke on TSN 1050 about the Senators and the decision to fire Boucher and their coaching search. Here's what Bob had to say.
The way the season's gone and the fact that his contract was expiring and that there's been so much change and going to continue to be so much change in Ottawa, it was an absolute given. There wasn't anybody, and I'm sure including Guy Boucher, who was waiting for the contract extension announcement on Guy Boucher and the coaching staff. You know, he was virtually dead man walking in terms of a long-term future in Ottawa. So we knew there was going to be a coaching change at the end of the season. It was basically carved in stone. And I think what's happened here over the last number of games and last number of weeks is that Pierre Dorion and the management team of the Ottawa Senators just didn't like the way the message was being delivered, didn't like the dynamic between the head coach and the players, didn't like the tendencies that they were starting to see. And it's less about losing six games in a row because, I mean, quite frankly, you look at the Sens lineup, I'm not sure what else what other outcome might exist other than continual losses. And that's probably going to happen even with Mark Crawford at the helm more nights than not the rest of the way. But I just don't think management liked the dynamic and the tendencies the team was showing, and they decided, hey, we're going to make a coaching change at the end of the year anyways. Let's make it now and start the search and see where we go from here.
That's TSN hockey insider Bob McKenzie addressing the Senators coaching debacle, coaching search.
Yeah, and Drew, Bob McKenzie summed it up perfectly there. But my whole point is, and it's also funny that the Sens' last win is against the Jets, by the way, but when you're talking about after the trade deadline, you've lost four games in a row, right? Mm-hmm. What did you expect to happen going into Washington? I mean, did anybody expect the Senators to win that game? They got hammered by the Capitals, one of the best teams in the East, a defending Stanley Cup champion. Obviously, they're hoping to win the division. They're tied with the Islanders right now. Mm-hmm. But that's my whole point. If he was a quote-unquote dead man walking, why not just wait until the end of the year? I like you said, it's a bizarre move, but to me, it's just a stupid move. Well, I mean, you know he's not going to be the coach next year,
and you know,
so
Mark,
why do you fire him now? Why not just wait a month?
And it's not like Mark Crawford's going to come in with some inspirational speech. I mean, Mark Crawford is, you know, certainly on those last legs as an NHL head coach. He's been more or less a disaster in his last few head coaching spots. Guy Boucher, by the way, this might have been his last NHL head coaching job as well. He seems like he's got a 2.5-year shelf life in any job that he's got, be it Tampa Bay, where he had success early, in Ottawa, where he had success early, and now he's out after 2.5 years. One name that was brought up by Chris Stevenson of TheAthletic.com, who covers the Senators, Jacques Martin.
Sure.
Former Ottawa Senators head coach. He's been with the Senators when they were in a state of flux. That's when he took the job back in 1996. He led the Senators to some of their best success as an organization. Veteran coach, certainly won't be overwhelmed by the job. A professional guy. So if they choose to not go with a young head coach, Jacques Martin is sort of an interesting name that I thought being mentioned was caught my eye.
Right, and he's currently an assistant with the Pittsburgh Penguins, right. So I believe they'd have to ask permission if he does still have another year left on his contract.
I don't know his contract.
I'm not
status.
Sure, but yeah, that would be a perfect fit, I think, because of the familiarity with the organization, and you just know that this team isn't going to be well. And with a young team, Drew, I think having a veteran coach is very important.
I would agree with you there. When we return, it's time for our monthly fantasy segment with Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey. All sorts of changes in the fantasy world after the trade deadline. We talked to Cam about how that's impacted fantasy hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Producer Sean Assor doing a great job on the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Dauber Hockey, it's time for our monthly look at the world of fantasy hockey. We're pleased to be joined by Cam Robinson. Cam, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem. How are we doing, Phillip?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well.
That's good. Obviously, Cam, with the trade deadline comes a shakeup in the world of fantasy hockey as well as the NHL. We want to start with the big acquisition by the Vegas Golden Knights. That is Mark Stone. He has an assist in his first three games with Vegas. He's playing with Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny. What do you expect production-wise from Mark Stone in his new opportunity with the Vegas Golden Knights?
Yeah, so I expect him to do similar things to what he was doing in Ottawa. Like you said, he grabbed himself his first assist last night. He's shooting the puck a ton. He's already put up, four per game in his three games in Vegas there. He hasn't had a ton of power play opportunities yet. Vegas hasn't drawn a ton, but they also split their unit. So he's on the quote-unquote first unit right now, but they do tend to kind of go a 50-55.5 sort of split, which is going to affect his production a tad on the power play. He is on that second line with Pacioretty and Stastny, but I could definitely see a move up there to replace Riley Smith on the top line at some point, too. I think that that's going to be something to look at. And, for all these players that we're going to talk about today, after you move teams, there's an adrenaline rush. You get in your first game, and you want to do really well. And then it's kind of more an acclimation of there's new surroundings. It's a new environment, and maybe your family's back where you left them, and so it's difficult. So I think a little bit of grace period for a lot of these guys, and then you're going to kind of see that uptick roll in the next couple of weeks.
Cam, all of us here in studio thought that the acquisition by Doug Wilson of Gustav Nyquist from the Detroit Red Wings was a really sneaky good move. How do you see that move impacting his fantasy value? Do you think he's going to put up similar numbers, or do you think he's going to play a boost, especially if he's going to play on that second line of the Sharks?
Yeah, so I agree that for the Sharks in real life, that was a nice grab, and I think the value that they got for him, it was fairly cheap too. So he's getting to play with Joe Thornton at even strength and on the second power play unit. Unfortunately, Evander Kane just went down with injury, so that means that Kevin LeBlanc moves up and to the second line, and that weakens that quote-unquote third line for the Sharks. I see it a little bit for fantasy as a downgrade for Nyquist. So he's having a pretty good rejuvenated season, but he goes from the first power play unit in Detroit to the second power play unit in San Jose. Less overall ice time. You know, he's not playing with as good of players all the time. No disrespect to Joe Thornton now in his later years. So I see it as a mild kind of downgrade and something that I'd probably put a little asterisk next to if I was looking at him on the wire.
So Cam, now that Mikael Granlund has switched from the Wild to the Predators, how has that impacted his fantasy value?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd say it's probably comparable to the quality of teammates that he was seeing in Minnesota with, you know, he's playing with Jason Zucker and Eric Staal a good deal. Now he's playing with Kyle Turris and Kelly Yarncroc. So, you know, similar. It's okay at evens. He can kind of take over that playmaking role from the wing a little bit from Kyle Turris and allow him to shoot the puck a bit. I think when the Preds are healthy, that'll help him a little bit too. It'll kind of even out their lines. Again, another team that splits their power play. They did last night anyways. Never good for fantasy, but he was on the quote-unquote top power play unit, but that wasn't with Victor Arvidsson or Ryan Johansson. So, you know, if he's seeing half the power play time with, you know, half the top six guys, that's not going to be ideal. So, again, I see this maybe as something lateral, maybe a slight downgrade for him just because of all the weapons in Nashville. If they go ahead and load up that top power play unit and he's working the half wall for it, then I like him a lot.
Cam Robinson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Cam is with Dauber Hockey. He joins us for our monthly look at the world of fantasy hockey. Cam, Matt Duchene obviously went from the Ottawa Senators to the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was over a point per game in Ottawa. He's continued to be over a point per game with 4 points in his first three games with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Do you expect that kind of production to continue from now through the end of the regular season?
It all depends on the deployment. So what he was doing in Ottawa, he was having obviously a tremendous year and perfect timing for a guy going into unrestricted free agency. But he was also shooting, you know, converting at 21% of his shots for a guy that historically, you know, lives around kind of the mid-teen. So a regression was going to happen. When he first joined Columbus there, he was skating on the top line with Panarin and Cam Atkinson. And if that's, you know, his role, then I'm all on board. But, you know, he was back kind of, Pierre-Luc Dubois was back on that line recently. And Duchene's a little less exciting when he's skating with Ryan Dzingel and Oliver Bjorkstrand. So if that's where his position is going to be, he's going to be on that second line. You know, it's probably we're looking at similar kind of lateral production with the expected regression in the shooting. So he is on the top power play unit. Columbus is just the 26th best power play in the league, though, so hopefully he can come in there and help that power play and rejuvenate it a little bit. But, you know, I've been waiting for his numbers to kind of slide all season long, and they haven't. We'll see if that happens playing on the second line in Columbus.
Cam, I mentioned to you yesterday I wanted to bring this player up, Erik Gustafsson on the Chicago Blackhawks. I feel like nobody's talking about the great season that he's having. 9 points in his last four games. He's up to 47 points in 61 games. He's tied for eighth in the NHL amongst defensemen as far as scoring goes. Is he the most underrated fantasy defenseman in the entire league right now? And would you still start him and look going forward, maybe pick him up in a keeper league?
I would. I actually tried to deal for him at the deadline in my keeper league, maybe not to keep him, but just as kind of insurance that everybody was waiting for the bubble to burst. So he went on that red hot streak kind of starting at the tail end of November. And you know, myself included, I was just waiting for the bottom to fall out, and it hasn't. So since the end of mid-November sort of thing, he's trailing only Giordano and Brent Burns for defensive points. And he's clicking at a point per game over that pace, just slightly above it. So obviously he's riding the wave as Patrick Kane goes off on a career year here, pushing for a heart. Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat, or, you know, Dylan Strome's rejuvenated and DeBrincat's coming with him. I think Gustafsson is the real deal. Despite his expected shooting metrics, they're gonna regress. So he's not going to convert on as many shots, but we don't expect him to be a point-per-game player from the back end. So I think the real question is, definitely ride him this year. If you have him on your squad or you have an opportunity to grab him, you want to do that as Chicago continues to push for a playoff spot. But heading into next year and where to draft this guy. So where do you put him? He doesn't have the pedigree of some of these guys. I expect him to be a 50-plus point defender next year. So a guy I like to look at is Justin Schultz. After a lot of years of kind of high expectations and he didn't meet them, he went to Pittsburgh. He put up 50 points 1 year, and the following year he was drafted on average, you know, 45th draft spot overall. And that's on a team that had Chris Letang. Chicago doesn't have anyone that's going to be pushing Gustafson next year. So I think he's going to be a really interesting player to watch, and you might be able to get yourself a good bargain in the kind of third, fourth, fifth round.
Cam, Tyler Bozak has 8 points in his last 10 games. He's centering the Blues' second line right now. Do you expect Bozak to keep producing, or should fantasy owners be cautious?
Yeah, I'd say I'd be a little cautious. I don't love that second line, although, you know, he is on a heater right now. But he is on the top power play unit, too. So if I love players that are going to be playing on the top power play unit. He's not a focal point on that unit, but if you're getting touches out there, especially with St. Louis, the way they're rolling, that he's one that I would keep him in the lineup while he's moving and shaking, and then be quick to pull him out as soon as he slows down.
Cam Robinson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Cam is with Dauber Hockey. He joins us for our monthly look. I was going to say yearly look, but our monthly look at the world of fantasy hockey. Cam, Casey Cizikas of the New York Islanders is having a career year in terms of his goals. He's up to 18 goals. Prior to this year, his career high was 9. He's obviously doubled his point total so far, double his goal total so far. Do you think that this continues? Is this, you know, an outlier? Is obviously his shooting percentage is up at 21%. When do you think the bottom sort of drops out on Casey Cizikas' goal production?
Yeah, any minute now. I'm definitely not buying. No power play time, no top six time. You know, like you said, his shooting metrics are way off. If for some reason you have him in your lineup and he's getting you those goals, good for you. But I wouldn't be risking it myself.
Cam, Andreas Johnsson's on a nice run right now, 14 points in his last 12 games, including 9 goals. He still seems like he's an under-the-radar player, though, in fantasy. Are you picking him up at this point in the season, especially when you're talking about weekly or daily pools?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I am. So, you know, he's riding shotgun next to Austin Matthews at even strength, and he's on the top power play unit. That's what you want to see. So, you know, he is skating, you know, still about 15 minutes a night, so he will get slid off that line at times. He's not going to continue to convert at 20% of his shots as he has been this year. So again, a regression's coming at some point. The other concern is that, you know, the Maple Leafs and Mike Babcock isn't afraid. He's not afraid to blend the lines up if something's not working mid-game or, you know, over a couple of games. So his deployment isn't secure, but the fact that he's producing so well of late really helps him. So I really like Andreas Johnsson, I should say. I think he's going to get some good money this year as a RFA heading into the summer, and that might kind of skew up the Maple Leafs cap situation, but right now, definitely, if you have an opportunity to get him in your lineup, I think you should.
Cam, who are 2 to 3 players you're looking at to put up some good fantasy numbers down the stretch?
Yeah, for sure. So I got a few guys here. Jake Voracek is maybe the hottest player in the league right now. He's got 9 points in his last 4 games. He's shooting the puck a ton. Him and Sean Couturier are looking great together on that second line and then on the top power play unit. So he's a bit of a forgotten man after that great season last year, putting up 80-plus points, and then he had the slow start. And so Philadelphia wasn't doing well, he wasn't doing well, and then he kind of slid off the radar. So Philly has a pretty good schedule for the fantasy playoffs as well. And while they're still, you know, technically in the playoff hunt, they're not really in it. But I think that you can see sustained production from Voracek down the stretch. Another couple guys I'm looking at is Mike Hoffman. So we're all seeing Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau really cooking right now. But Hoffman, he's riding shotgun on that top line. He's playing the point on the top power play unit. He's got 7 points in his last 4 games. And Florida, they do have a lot of, you know, several games remaining on the schedule, and but it's mostly on the road. So you got to watch that a little bit, too, when you're looking at the splits. And then 2 guys in Boston. So Denton Heinen has taken over David Pastrnak's spot on that top line, and he'll continue to be on it, and they're rolling pretty well. I hid the risk with him, so I'd watch out with him, is that when Pastrnak comes back, the acquisition of Marcus Johansson will probably push him out of the top 6. And then you look at Jake DeBrusk and David Krejci are looking really, really strong together on the second line. Both are on the top power play unit, but you got to watch again. Whenever Pastrnak comes back, if that's a week, 2 weeks, one of those guys is going to get the bump off, probably David Krejci. So you got to really be keenly aware when you're setting your lineup at who's going to be getting that prime deployment.
Cam Robinson covers the NHL and covers the world of fantasy hockey for Dauber Hockey. Cam, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Cam. When we come back, a member of the NHL, of the Winnipeg Jets, has a meeting with the NHL Department of Player Safety. We'll tell you about it after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
And that player is at...
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Professional radio tip, Mr. Ginsburg, but when we come back from break, it's not usually advisable to push the microphone away from you if you want to be heard on air.
Drew, just focus on yourself. I'll do me.
Okay, you do you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors is final night in town. Dave Hempstead has two shows, but they're both sold out. So you know what you need to do? You need to get your tickets for Graham Kay, for John Doerr, and for Jay Farrow right now before it's sold out. RumorsComedyClub.com. Get your tickets really early because you know the shows are going to sell out. Before the break, I mentioned that a member of the Winnipeg Jets has a meeting with the Department of Player Safety. That player is Adam Lowry. After his stick-swinging, high-sticking incident last night against Phil Forsberg of the Nashville Predators, we know that Lowry served a penalty for that. Now the Department of Player Safety has to decide if he's going to serve a suspension for that instance. You guys, opinion? Penalty? No penalty? Suspension? No suspension?
Well, no, it was absolutely a penalty.
Obviously it was.
And I think that he could get a game for that. And Lowry's not a guy who has had a lot of history with the NHL Department of Player Safety. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think he's ever been fined or suspended. Has he?
I wouldn't go that far. I'm going to look it up, but I think there... I recall something.
I feel like there's one incident.
At least a fine, I think. I don't recall. Yeah, he was suspended. He was suspended back in 2014.
That was 5 years ago.
Okay, well, he was still...
If you get arrested, you've still been arrested.
Yes,
I mean,
he boarded Patrick Kaleta of the Buffalo Sabres and served a one-game suspension for that back in 2014.
Who actually remembers that?
I did.
The internet. The internet, God bless him,
okay, so
remember
he was suspended
things.
For one game. The point is, Drew, he's a clean hockey...
saying he's a reform man.
Yes.
Well, he's just not a guy that
he's not a.
He doesn't have a lengthy rap sheet.
He's not a repeat offender. That's definitely not the case.
Right. He's a guy that plays
by the
game
by the letter of the law, by the NHL rules. He's not a repeat offender, Dave. So
are you done mowing Curly?
Suspension, Dave?
Yeah, he'll probably get suspended a game.
I think he'll probably get a game.
So that would mean the Jets would be without Adam Lowry.
Parlindholm time.
You think he gets into the lineup over Matt Hendricks?
Yeah, because Matt Hendricks hasn't been playing, whereas Lindholm has been playing with the Leafs.
You know what I don't think people are talking about enough is that the Jets had a par and a bogey on trade deadline day.
That's good.
That's not bad.
Pretty good.
It's not bad.
Bogdan?
I got it. No, I got where you're going. That's not bad. I mean, that's kind of clever. Obviously, the Jets fans hope that the golf season won't start too early for the Jets as they head into Columbus tomorrow evening to play the Blue Jackets as the start of a crucial four-game road trip for the Jets. They may be without Adam Lowry. We'll know more about that. On what website can you find out that information, Dave?
I think it's called thelegalcurve.com.
There you go. No, you haven't got your cheap plug-in yet today, so I had to throw it to you.
You know, but Drew, back to Adam Lowry and that incident with Philip Forsberg last night. It happened late in the game, but just based on what happened with Evgeny Malkin getting a game, he could have easily got two or three games.
Well, Malkin would have been gone for the rest of the year if he had connected with Michael
Malkin's
Rappel.
And Malkin's was worse, but I mean, still, you have to have control of your stick, and mm-hmm. Adam Lowry didn't, and as I mentioned, he's not a guy that has been in trouble a lot as far as discipline goes, so, you know, if he gets a game, he gets a game, and that's the reality of the situation.
And Lindholm's played 61 games this season. Hendricks has been limited to 22. His last game was February 12th. So, I mean, to me, it's not even a question. I mean, again, Matt Hendricks was brought in for the reason. We were having some fun with it based on what Jacob Trouba said about him yesterday. It's like your dad coming back from a road trip. It's clear that this team loves Matt Hendricks. We saw, and Elliot Friedman wrote about it, how, you know, Calgary, other teams were inquiring with the Minnesota Wild about getting Matt Hendricks. So clearly there's something that teams love about him, but I don't think you're putting him in the lineup over a Lindholm who's played 61 games.
So you would assume Brian Little, of course, would move back to a center ice position, and then you go up the middle with Kopp and with Little and with Hayes and with Scheifele up the middle for tomorrow night, and Lindholm would slot in on the wing somewhere for the Winnipeg Jets. But again, you know, a bit of a reshuffling and a little bit more adversity for the Jets potentially if Adam Lowry is indeed suspended for his hit or his high stick on Philip Forsberg of the Nashville Predators.
Right, and they'll miss him, and it's one game though. And when we're talking about, you know, the grand scheme of things, it's just a cost of your actions on the ice, right? And I don't think anybody's going to think about it any more than that. Nobody's going to say that, you know, this is somehow a sign that Adam Lowry is undisciplined or anything like that. It's just one of those incidents that I think he probably would like to have back.
Yep.
And things happen on the ice, right?
Yeah,
And again, I think we can move on here, because if he gets a one-game suspension, I think nobody's going to be surprised, but also nobody's really going to think twice about it when it comes to Adam Lowry as a hockey player, because he's been such a valuable member of this team for so long. And the important thing is it's not going to be a long suspension, and he's going to be good to go for the stretch drive here.
The reality is I think he was mad that Forsberg hit him. It was a good hit by Forsberg, and I think he was wanting to send a message. If you asked Adam Lowry, did he want to get him in the face? Obviously not. I think he just wanted to get him a little rap. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you have to have control of your stick, and he got him in the head. And it's a dangerous place. So, I mean, I suspect that there's going to be at least a game.
Yeah. Speaking of players who have a bit of a rap, a little bit of an interesting side note with Brad Marchand tonight, as he does battle against an interesting team given these following stats, Dave Minuk.
He has playing in game number 666.
666.
He's got 666 penalty minutes.
In his career.
In his career.
Not this season.
Not this season. In his career.
Yeah.
And the team he's playing against? The Devils.
There you go. So 666, 666,
and also Brad Marchand's favorite song is 666, Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden, right?
I thought you were going to go with Sympathy for the Devil.
And his favorite highway is Route 66 as well.
That's in Arizona, though.
Anyways, okay, there you go. So a little Brad Marchand trivia there. You can use that on your afternoon travails around the city of Winnipeg as you're running your errands or doing whatever you are doing. John Tavares returned to the New York Islanders this week.
Islanders fans need to chill.
No, I disagree.
I disagree entirely. I thought it was fantastic.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, you thought that they...
Those chants were amazing.
But that video that TV station produced where like the fans.
No, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's embarrassing. I don't need to see that stuff, but I'm sorry. Like the energy level, like I jokingly said about it last night. I said, you know, Nashville, Winnipeg, you got a rivalry game. Hopefully we can get half, maybe even a third, maybe even a fourth, that type of energy inside Bell MTS Place that they had in Nassau Coliseum. I mean, I don't know how many people were in the building, but it was rocking. I mean, the chants were creative. They weren't disrespectful. I thought they were all very funny.
Mm-hmm.
The passion of the fan base was, I mean, obviously throwing the snakes and throwing the jersey. Don't throw on the ice. I think that's unnecessary. But honestly, like that game was incredible. And then you tune the Leafs 6-1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not even a function of like, okay, you had a good game. The fans were loud. I mean, it's a game the Islanders want to win. They pump the Leafs.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't care what anybody says. I hate when people tell a fan base how you're supposed to react. I mean, everybody is an individual. They have they're entitled to feel and react however they do. So I when people like, I mean, Sean Avery, talk about sanctimonious.
Where did Sean Avery come from?
Yeah. Did you see his thing?
I did. I'm like, Sean Avery.
Daniel Carcillo's Instagram account.
Well, Sean Avery's still a thing? We're still paying attention to Sean Avery?
I mean, the point is, I mean, I'm not, but I just...
What about Sean Avery's hat?
Yeah, but it came into
Urban sombrero.
Yeah, exactly. But it showed up, and he's like... I mean, it was still funny, because he's entitled to his opinion. But the fact of the matter is, I can't stand when people tell a fan base, you have to act in X manner. I mean, again, fans are fans, and when you have a collective group of people doing this, it's not like... The point is, this wasn't a team directive. It wasn't like the team saying, hey, do this.
Handled it perfectly. Yeah, they did the tribute video. The Islanders were above it, and they let their fan base be the instigators of it. Perfect decision by the Islanders organization.
Right, exactly.
No, I agree with what you're saying in terms of the hockey paying customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fans that buy tickets and buy the merchandise and all that, they're entitled to do whatever they want. I firmly believe that. You can boo whoever you want to boo, as long as it's respectful. I just thought they crossed a line, and I just thought there was so much vitriol coming from Islanders fans towards a guy that was such a big part of your team that I think handled last year the right way. Like, I realized that John Tavares, the Islanders fans wanted him back. They wanted him to sign an 8-year contract. And I realized that stung, especially for a team that hasn't had a lot of playoff success in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I mean a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that. I just think there were so many Islanders fans that were so angry and treating John Tavares like a villain when all he did was sign with a team that he thought gave him the best chance to win a Stanley Cup and where he saw his future. So I agree with you. I'm not saying that I'm not trying to say that, you know, Islanders fans, you know, overall, I guess what I'm saying, I guess in summation is that I just think they went a little bit too far. the chance, I'm fine with all of that because we've seen some great chants here in Winnipeg and across the NHL. It just seemed like Islanders fans were too angry. That's all I'm saying. And we've been to the old Nassau Coliseum, Drew. We were there back in 2011 for your bachelor party. I mean, it's a great rink, and New York has great hockey fans and great sports fans in general. And we know how ruthless Rangers fans can be, by the way, with the, you know, screw the Islanders chants and all that. But I just thought they went a little bit too far. That's all I'm saying. I just thought they needed to take a bit of a chill pill.
Ezzy with the last word on the Islanders fans. That's the last word on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our guests today, Murat Atash of TheAthletic.com, Jody Shelley, Riley Cote, Stephen Wino, and Cam Robinson. Really appreciate them joining us on the program. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.